with Mr. Rasmussen zooming in. So matters are the announcements of actions taken in closed session, expulsions, all but item EH21-22/36 were approved by the board. And the suspended expulsion of EH21-22/38 was approved by the board. Okay. So we have to read the expulsions that were approved. They're items EH21-22-31 through EH21-22/35 and EH21-22/37 were approved by the board. Okay, we have recognitions tonight.
Yes, if we can please go down to the podium and recognize the board members. If you could please join me.
It's been a delay in recognizing past board members. We have three board members who served their terms and were replaced by new board members. So tonight we're making up for lost time. So Mr. Jim Fleury served on the Minnesota Joint Unified School Board of Trustees for 16 years, from 2004 to 2020, and served as the board's CSBA delegate for 10 years. He also served as a special education representative and clerk during his tenure on the board. His career with the district lasted 42 years and started as a bus driver in 1962. After he gained his teaching credential, he began teaching at McKinney Intermediate School in 1971. From there, he was vice principal at McKinney and then Yuba Gardens. Eventually, he returned back to the classroom teaching fifth grade at Ella Elementary, and that's where he retired. He was elected to the MUTA president in 2003. And he retired from teaching in 2004. So we would just like to recognize him and for all this dedication, his many years to the district. Our next retiree is Susan Scott. Susan served on the MJUSD Board of Trustees for 4 years, from 2016 to 2020. She served as the clerk of the Board of Trustees for most of her time on the board. Her 26 years with the district began in 1987 at Alicia Elementary as a clerk, and her career continued as a clerk at Ella Elementary and then Yuba Gardens Intermediate, and her last post was at Marysville High School, where she was the attendance clerk. She retired from the district in 2013. Is Greg Scott here?
Greg Scott.
Are you accepting?
Yes.
Okay, come on up.
Hi, my name is Grace Scott. I am Susan's granddaughter. I'm accepting this award on her behalf. She just wanted me to relay to everyone that she is extremely grateful and appreciative of this award, and she would like to mention that she enjoyed her time serving on the board, and she is always available to those that need her. Thank you so much for this recognition.
Okay, and our last retiree was Paul Ellison, who served at the MJUSD Board of Trustees for 4 years, from 2016 to 2020. His 26 years for the district began in 1990, teaching at Foothill Intermediate School, and that is where he retired in 2016. So we really appreciate his dedication to the district. That's all for me.
I appreciated my 16 years on the board, and more than that, my years with the district. I saw a lot of changes, and we have a lot of good employees. That's what I appreciate on the board. We had a lot of good employees, and I've been here through every superintendent we've had since we began in 66 Unified, and it's been a pleasure serving this district and the students, and we just have good people working for this district, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we have comments from board members. Mr. Boone?
Nothing tonight.
Mr. Crawford?
Yeah, you bet. Right before vacation, I had
to... microphone on?
It's on.
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me? Right before vacation, I had the opportunity that Friday to go out to South Lyndhurst and see my running buddies and say hi to Brian and tell his class how he used to sweat too much when he jogged and stuff. They loved that. But the great part was I wandered over to my old stomping grounds, Lyndhurst High School. And I went in and seen Frances because she was a former student. And then she went and got Bob. And Bob showed me really the time of my life. I was going to spend a couple minutes there with you, Bob. He changed my whole outlook on Lyndhurst. I mean, from the master chef to all the things that you've done to improve that. That is not the campus I started my career. Even those holes in the library you fall into are non-existent. Congratulations to what all you did, and for whatever I said in the past, I revoke it, my friend. Thank you.
Doug Quiddle.
Yeah, I'd like to congratulate the recognitions of Mrs. Scott, Paul Allison, and especially Jim Fleury. As a seventh grader at McKinney, Mr. Fleury encouraged me to run for student body president, at which I thought he was absolutely out of his mind, but I did, and I won. And I continued to do that and win also as an eighth grader. And it's very common for a lot of us when we're growing up to have mentors and people in our life that affect us and shape us and make who we are today. Thank you, Jim, for that. A lot of the encouragement and direction that you gave me as a leader is brought me a lot of great opportunities, and also he's my cousin. Thank you.
Stacy?
Yes, I'd like to echo Mr. Criddle's sentiments. Thank you, Mr. Flory. Really appreciate that all that you have done for our community. And Mrs. Markle, it's good to have you here as well. Welcome back.
Mr. Criddle?
No comments at this time. Thank you.
Well, I just want to... Randy Rasmussen? Okay. I guess, okay. Thank you. I can't think of too well. My experience with the board started with Mr. Flurry. He took me under his wing and gently guided me into the complex role of trustees. And it may look easy sitting back there looking up here, but it's got a lot more going on than appearances. So I really commend Jim for all of his years of service and just wish him well in his retirement. Thank you so much. Okay. Opportunity for employee organization.
We have the students.
I'm missing things. Anyway, we have the school representatives, school site representatives from Marysville and Lyndhurst. Lyndhurst, can you make your report?
Could not make it for transportation issues.
Okay. Okay, Marysville?
Good evening, Board. My name is Jariah Lott. I am a senior at Marysville High School, and I hold the title of ASB President. I stand here tonight to talk about the activities and events Marysville High has. Along with the start of our spring sports, we have the opportunity for students to join upcoming clubs, such as Choir, CSF, California Scholarship Federation, and make their own clubs. Next week will be our annual winter homecoming. We will be starting the week off with homecoming royalty voting and ending it with our hallway build competition. The following week will be our kindness week. Our leadership class is very excited to work with Breaking Down the Walls, a program that works with creating a united student body. Our academic decathlon team has been working very hard for these past few months to prepare for our county competition, which actually starts tomorrow and continues for the next two Saturdays. Acadeca requires a great deal of dedication. And this year's amazingly talented team is hoping, again, repeat as county champions. If they do so, they will advance to the state competition in March. Last but not least, we have our FFA week. A week full of fun and learning. Our FFA chapter holds exciting games, activities that students can participate in at lunch, as well as their own spirit days. Every Saturday, we have competitions for Ag Mech, Vet Science, Floral, Horse Judging, and Speaking Teams. Our chapter holds monthly meetings and even got the privilege to meet our state officers. Thank you for allowing me to have this opportunity. Last but not least, Marysville High School would be honored if you, our board, will join us in attending the winter homecoming basketball game on February 4th. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we have opportunity for employee organizations to address the board, Marysville Unified Teacher Association.
Good evening, Mr. Davis, and the rest of the board and our attendees. This evening, I basically have a few parts to my comments. I have some thanks to give. I have some questions and thoughts about a few agenda items, and then kind of a few words about negotiations. As far as a thank you to start off with, I would like to thank the representatives from both Lyndhurst High School and Marysville High School for coming and reporting. I know Mr. Eckert just stated that Lyndhurst had some transportation issues, but even signing up to do that job, agreeing to do that job as a student in high school, and Jariah being here this evening and doing it, I know from standing here myself, this could be slightly intimidating and a little nerve-wracking. So kudos to a couple of our high school students for agreeing to do that, and congratulations to Jariah for doing a great job on her first report here tonight. We also, for MUTA, we would like to also thank the board members that received recognition this evening. Paul Allison, whom I knew the entire time he taught in the district, the entire time he was on the board, so we thank him for his time and dedication. Mr. Fleury, who quite literally I have known my entire life, Mr. Fleury actually drove my mother to school on the school bus. No shock to anybody in the room who knows Mr. Fleury, of course, but he has known my family way longer than I've been alive, and so I know that he gave a lifetime to Marysville Joint Unified, so we would like to honor and show our appreciation to Mr. Fleury as well. And then, of course, Susan Scott, on a very personal level, I will tell you that Susan Scott and I spent a lot of time at Marysville High School. We used to kind of joke that she was my counselor extraordinaire. You get all stressed out, you go down to Susan, and Susan will get you all straightened out. And so I miss her dearly at my site, like I said, on a very personal level. But also, Susan gave a lot of years to students in this district and also to the board and to our community. So we thank her as well. Kind of shifting gears, but still in the thank you department, we have our common assessments project that is going on. And we just started, we had our first team meetings yesterday, and those went amazingly well. I wanted to thank the almost 100 teachers from Marysville Joint Unified that participated in that. And also thank them and acknowledge the fact that they're giving of a lot of their time, energy, and talents, and really trying to have a collaborative effort between the teachers and the school district on this very large project and very timely undertaking. But we also, in addition to thanking our teachers and our unit members, we do want to thank Amy Stratton and her team here at the district office. I know Amy put a lot of hours into this. Alicia has also helped her out, as well as Mimi. I'm sure that Rocco also has helped out here and there. But her team has done well, and Amy has done a fabulous job kind of checking in on us and being a great support to that project as well. So we want to thank all of those people. And like I said, almost 100 teachers giving of additional time that they really don't have right now, I think speaks volumes to the importance that the teachers are putting on this. Additionally, kind of switching gears completely at this point, I just wanted to kind of point out a few things on the agenda this evening that the teachers union has some questions and some concerns about, some thoughts to put out there that hopefully may come up and may not, but hopefully the board will take into consideration. The first, of course, being on page 4 of the agenda and approving an agreement with Bach Law Group. The teachers union has some questions and concerns about whether or not that is in addition to Kingsley Bogard and the almost $500,000 that was spent there last year, and we're well on our way to $250,000 for legal fees with Kingsley Bogard this year, and so we're just curious if this is in addition to, because we're getting into some really hefty dollars purely on legal fees, while the district is also informing teachers that they don't have the money to pass along COLA. And so that is a question that I know you cannot answer right at this moment, but I'm going to hope does get answered. Additionally, on the next page, on page 5, approving the agreement with Capital Advisors Group. We knew that the Capital Advisors Group was coming in next week to do a board study session on the budget. We had absolutely no idea that they were also going to be hired on as consultants for a year. And I believe that the board study session was kind of PR'd or publicized, put out there as a neutral budget presentation, which the teachers union already kind of had a problem with because I didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday. I know that Capital Advisors Group is much like school services, but that was fine. But now I'm not sure how that could be a neutral budget presentation to the board when they are actually a hired paid consultant for a year to the tune of $2,000 a month. That doesn't exactly seem neutral. And so just as a reminder, the teachers union has never provided that same amount of time of opportunity to inform the board of budget issues. We basically get to have a few minutes here at a meeting once in a while. But that seems bizarre at best. And so we might at least want to make sure that people realize that the board study session is actually being put on by an advisory group that is now actually paid by the district. Additionally, on the next page, page 6, wouldn't have questions on this if the teachers union had known anything about it before we got the agenda for the board meeting. I'm curious on the teacher union front, and as the representative and the spokesperson for this group, I'm not sure where this training is even supposed to happen or how it's supposed to happen. We keep adding in trainings and trainings and trainings that teachers are supposed to do before school starts, like our mandated Keenan training, our suicide prevention. We had just worked with the district, and thank you also for that. We had just worked with the district, had some conversations about the calendar for next year, and we do have, you know, some, I guess you would say, informal agreement that one of our teacher days before school starts will be for the Keenan videos and the suicide prevention trainings and all of that. Adding this in now, we're getting to more hours than are in one day. And so I don't see anything in this agenda item that provides for how teachers are supposed to get this done, within what days, within what hours, and how they're supposed to be compensated for. And so those things could have all been addressed and alleviated if I had known about this beforehand. And we were just at the bargaining table on Friday, so hopefully this will kind of be one of those lessons learned, because we go back to the bargaining table on Friday, that maybe some of these issues could be made aware to the school, to the teachers union before they show up on the school board's agenda. Which, speaking of which, the last one is clear over on page 15, and that is the first read of the board policy in regards to employee use of technology. There again, this is the first that I saw, or my group saw, an update to this. And these comments right now could have all been avoided if any of that had been communicated to us beforehand. I think, speaking of negotiations, we'll switch into kind of the negotiations end of things. I think that what we're trying to get towards is the spirit of, you know, being more collegial and more teamwork and more collaborative. I think that's where we're going. That was more the tone of things definitely last week. I think that bears out in both of the bargaining updates that went out from the district and from the teachers union that last Friday was very pleasant, very conversational. But along those lines, some of these items then could have just been talked through and still could. But if we can kind of bring to the cognizant level that that would be helpful, I think we can avoid a lot of these comments. But then also within negotiations, I understand that last week was more, like I said, you know, pleasant and friendly and conversational and collegial, but you still have 500 educators, professional educators in this district who are begging you for nothing more than slightly under COLA. We are still talking about 5% out of a 5.07% COLA. And the teachers here are working, and they are dedicated, and they are giving and giving and giving. And I sincerely hope that as we continue on in these bargaining conversations, that we will, in fact, come to an agreement on that. But your teachers need and want the 5% COLA. We recently heard from school services, and I'm sure you'll hear from capital advisors, about how, you know, the cost of living for both this year and next year, which is projected to be 5.33%, they're already talking about how to inform your stakeholders that, you know, they probably won't see all of that because of the rising costs, and that's why the COLA is so high. Well, if the costs are high for the school district, I can guarantee you your employees are no exception to that rule. The cost of living is greater for us as well, not just for Marysville Joint Unified. And so as we continue along, I sincerely hope we can continue these conversations. I sincerely hope we can come to an agreement, because I can tell you that the 5% that the teachers are asking for this year is way lower than it could have been and way lower than it is in other districts even. And it still doesn't get your teachers a salary increase of any kind. Our take-home pay is still lower than it was last year in many instances. And as we continue along, our buying power is less and less and less. And people then will get out of this profession and people will get out of this district. And we need to do all we can to prevent that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association, Number 326 and Number 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. Now we're moving into public comments. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per Board Law 9323. We have two public comments. Tiffany?
Hi. I know last board meeting I said you don't see me very often, and yet here I am again, right? So just wanted to say that we're all aware, just like Angela said, that teachers are leaving this profession at an alarming rate. Right now they're kind of finding some cozy offices, jobs where they can use the restroom whenever they feel like it, things that we don't get. And attracting and retaining teachers right now is a really big issue, and it's going to just get worse in these next few years. So, in fact, there have even been colleges here in the United States that have had to shut down their teacher programs due to not having enough applicants. So nationwide, I know this is an issue, and here in our district, it's an issue. So what we're asking for is for you guys to show that you value us with more than just words, right? We're asking for the 5% raise. And I think that that would go really far in showing teachers that you value us, that we want to stay here, that we don't want to go find corporate jobs with cushy chairs and restroom breaks, that we do want to stay here where our passion is, and just kind of show that you value us and do it with that raise instead of just blanket thank yous would be fantastic. So just coming up here to state that I support our 5% that the bargaining team is asking for, and that I think it would go far in showing that you value teachers. Thank you.
Thank you. Tammy?
Members of the board, it's difficult for me to think back 30 years ago when I entered this profession as a new teacher. A few things I do remember, though. As a single parent first starting out in this career, I knew there was no way I could survive on a substitute salary. So I finished up my credential year at UC Davis and began my employment for MJUSD, knowing that my income would be substantial enough to cover all my basic needs and that my health care plan would not break me. Boy, things sure have changed over the last few decades. I recently had a discussion with a new teacher in our district, a teacher putting in 10-plus hours daily, navigating the effects of this pandemic, satisfying all the requirements of new teachers, appeasing parents while presenting meaningful curriculum for her students, grading, planning, reaching out to families, all those things that are expected of teachers, of new teachers. The funny or not-so-funny thing is that for all these added responsibilities, obligations, and expectations, this individual receives about $150 more a month than before she was an official classroom teacher within our district. The job she held prior to this school year, she was a substitute before the rate increase that you just provided in order to sweeten the pot to allure more subs to our district. If you figure in the pay increase you just approved, a fully credentialed first-year teacher is bringing home less each month than a substitute teacher that accepts the position each day of the month. I know what you're thinking. Well, substitute teachers don't get health benefits, so here's something to ponder. This same teacher is still eligible to be on her parents' medical, so as a substitute, it's costing her nothing. But as a first-year teacher, about $172 comes out of her check each month, so she cannot have our insurance. Another young teacher I know who was a substitute before entering our district currently pays $1,200 a month for health care, for which she still has to pay 20% out of pocket. As a substitute, she actually qualified for Medi-Cal that paid 100% of everything. So I'm not sure our current benefits plan could really be considered attractive enough to recruit a new teacher to our district. I always tell my students, don't compare apples and oranges when we're talking math. And some of you may think that these are two totally separate situations, but I can tell you right now for these teachers, they're simply looking at what goes into the bank each month, what money they have to pay their rent, to buy groceries with, to fill up their gas tanks with, all in an economy that's experiencing all-time high inflation rates. This year, our district received over 5% COLA, and it's projected that next year we'll see the same. This district is bringing in more money than ever before, and with having to spend down reserves, I implore you to consider the scenario presented before you today. Our teachers deserve to do more than just scrape by. Our teachers deserve COLA. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going to have two presentations, one from Marysville High School and one from McKinney Intermediate. Which one wants to go first? Marysville High School.
Marysville High School will go first. Thank you for the opportunity to present this evening. My name is Siobhan Matthews, and I have the privilege of being the principal at Marysville High, a place near and dear to my heart. Today with me, assistant principals Amy Eagleston and John Itheburn. 5 years ago, we took a team of certificated and classified staff on a summer retreat and took a good look at our mission and vision. And from this retreat, we came back with a draft to our staff. That was my first summer as principal at Marysville High School. Here is the mission and vision statement for our school. The mission of Marysville High School is that all students will learn at a high level to ensure college and career readiness. From this mission, we designed what we want for our students and our school. Our vision, the vision of Marysville High School, is to become a model collaborative learning community. Through our Indian way of being respectful, responsible, and healthy, our learning community members will be lifelong learners who can communicate effectively and think critically. This leads us to our WASS self-study. The Western Association of Schools and Colleges is an accreditation cycle of self-study. This year, we took an in-depth look at our progress over the past 6 years and determined our strengths and our growth areas for the future. WASC visited our site in November to validate our self-study. The 3-day visit was virtual and very interesting. We would like to show you our welcome video tour made by a multimedia class taught by Mrs. Jimenez for the WASC committee. This is our opening welcome introduction to our school.
Hello, my name is Mrs. Jimenez. Come on.
Yeah, I would like to thank our multimedia students. They did a ton of pre-work for WASC. They filmed all our CTE courses, you name it. If it happened on the campus, they filmed it, uploaded it, so that we could let WASC see who we are and what we were doing. So.
Hi, I'm John Etheburn, assistant principal, Marysville High School. First time at one of these meetings, so just to let you know, I'm a newbie. So I'm going to talk about the Marysville High School school-wide learner outcomes, or the SLOs. From the WASC self-study process and our vision statement, our staff determined what student proficiency will look like for Marysville High School students. So Marysville High School students will demonstrate proficiency as lifelong learners. They will demonstrate academic honesty and integrity. They will demonstrate work ethic by respecting deadlines and due dates. They set long and short-term academic and career goals. And they will be college and career ready. As effective communicators, they will demonstrate proficiency in reading, writing, listening, and speaking. They will demonstrate technological literacy. As critical thinkers, they will problem solve with a growth mindset, and they will apply learning through evaluation and analysis to create solutions. Thank you.
Good evening. From our in-depth self-study and the district LCAP goals, we drafted the following goals for the school-wide plan for student achievement, also known as the SIPSAs. These are the five SIPSA goals that we want to achieve. 1, increase academic rigor and instruction. 2, increase positive school culture and reduce suspensions. 3, increase outcomes for educationally disadvantaged youth. And 4, increase college and career readiness. From the WASC validation visit and our WASC report, our staff and the WASC visiting committee determined the following strengths. 1, we have increased our rigor through increased college prep offerings and our co-teaching sections. 2, we have increased and streamlined our CTE pathways. 3, we continue to have a strong PBIS program. 4, we have increased our social-emotional support through our freshman seminar class, increased counseling department, collaboration with Sutter Yuba Behavioral Health, and our PBIS program. And 5, we have a variety of course offerings to engage students' interests and learning styles, including our CTE programs and pathways. Again, from the self-study and our WASC self-reflection, these are the growth areas that the WASC Visiting Committee recommended that we work on. 1, continue the development of the PLC process by developing a systematic plan to support all learners during the school day, including intervention, AVID, enrichment, and SEL wellness groups. 2, teachers will increase the use of assessment data to drive instruction, enhance student learning, and provide timely feedback through the use of a multi-tiered system of support. And 3, administration and staff will work collaboratively to create a plan to develop and regularly review post-secondary choices to ensure students are supported as they transition from high school to college and life. From these growth areas, we will set goals and create an action plan that goes even deeper than the SIPSA goals.
Lastly, Marysville High School would like to invite the board to attend any of our upcoming events. You may have heard from Jariah. come on to campus and see our students in action. We have an open invitation. Thank you for listening to our presentation tonight.
Thank you very much. McKinney?
All right. Good evening, School Board, President Davis, Dr. Israni, Dr. Greco, Mrs. Pasalia, and community members in attendance. My name is Joe Seiler, and I have the privilege of serving the students of Anna McKinney as principal. Joining me tonight is our assistant principal, Mr. Troy Hang. I'd like to thank you for allowing us the opportunity to share our school with you this evening. We will be presenting our school plan for student achievement with you tonight as well as some key features of our school. Prior to COVID, our staff spent time before school started to establish a mission statement and core values that you can see here. We are a school that strives for academic success by cultivating lifelong learners. We understand the power of strong relationships between our school staff, students, and community members, and we prioritize the learning environment while supporting our staff and students. To meet the requirements of the Every Student Succeeds Act, our primary focus revolves around two key components. A, all children have the same opportunity to receive a fair, equitable, and high-quality education, and B, to close the educational achievement gaps among our most vulnerable subgroups. As you will see in our upcoming slides, we have closely aligned our site goals with the district LCAP goals. In developing our SIPSA, our single plan for student achievement, we utilize multiple means of input, which are listed here. Some of the means of input were prioritized, such as input from site council meetings and parent communications. We also focused on our discipline and suspension data. So as you can see, we have aligned our goals with the LCAP. Goal 1 focuses primarily on academic achievement for all students on our campus. Goal 2 directs focus to safe learning environment that is focused on academic achievement. And Goal 3, we are excited about. We have experienced success through the reclassification of 16 English language learners as our ELD program is strengthened in years to come as we predict continued success. Goal 4 focuses on an aspect that we sometimes forget, the strength of strong relationships with our students, parents, and community members. Our communications with our parents revolve around 3 key components: transparency, trust, and accessibility. In Goal 5, we model for our students the importance of lifelong learning as we learn best practices and new strategies to meet the needs of our ever-changing student population. Here are some highlights and key components of each goal. Goal 1 focuses on strategies to improve academic achievement. Goal 2 provides resources and support to our at-risk kiddos. Goal 3 focuses on our EL students. Goal 4 emphasizes the importance of school-to-home communication. And Goal 5 focuses on improving and supporting best practices through continued and ongoing self-improvement. A quick list of our budget summary for the 2021-22 school year. We have recognized the need for something beyond our traditional literature and math subjects. That's why we started STEAM electives in our elective wheel with 7th and 8th graders. Among the strengths of this were an emphasis on problem solving and meaningful collaboration as kids have worked through these different programs with our teachers. In addition, it's amazing to watch them gain confidence through hands-on learning. Here's a couple examples of our electives in our elective wheel. We are super excited for the eventual addition of AVID next year and our pathway into Integrated One as well as next year. I would now like to introduce our assistant principal, Mr. Troy Hain, to present the next few slides on campus culture, which has required a new level of commitment and sacrifice from community members and staff during our shared COVID experience. Teamwork has never been more important to our success.
Good evening, board and people in attendance. Our PBIS program was started a few years ago by Mrs. Matthews, and has grown stronger and stronger ever since, as evidenced by the awards listed across the top of the page there. Any good program goes through review and revisions. So one of the things that we've done this year is we've revised our PBIS cards to the card you see in the middle there. We've also updated our posters around our campus, so they're a little fresher looking. Last year during COVID, we started an elective using the McKinney News with one of our teachers. It didn't grow as well as it could have, but this year it has grown exponentially. The McKinney News is a weekly production put on by Mr. Foch, one of our teachers at our site. It's run by students, shot by students, and there's an example of our students who do the weekly drawings. This year we've had the recent addition of our ORC, Mr. Lopez, who is taking the lead on our PBIS program. So through the process, he has been organizing our meetings and facilitating the program. On a weekly basis, we acknowledge our students with the PBIS through PBIS drawings in the news. We also have a special recognition that we call Fritter Friday. Our students' names are drawn, and during second period, we announce over the loudspeakers, and a fritter is brought to them. A fritter is roughly about the size of my hand, so it becomes a big thing. We are in the middle of a Spirit Week that's being put on by our leadership group. Tomorrow is Crazy Mask Day, so we will celebrate those students. And previously during October, we ran a Saturation Week where we acknowledged aspects that our campus had said, hey, we need our students to bring their Chromebooks, do this, do that. And we did live PBIS drawings in our first, second, and third period classes going along saying, hey, do you have your stuff? And they were recognized right then and there on the spot. So our PBIS program is one of our programs that we're supremely proud of. We recognize that the middle school experience took a pretty big hit during COVID. So coming back, we refocused and kind of said, where can we revamp and re-energize our campus? One of the areas was school dances. So far this year, we've had two school dances. Living with the COVID protocols, we first ran an outdoor dance, which you see pictured here. It was a CSI theme. It was ran right around Halloween. And you can see there where they had caution tape, and it was themed that way. Our second dance was ran in December, and we ran it as a hybrid. We were allowed at that time to bring kids into our cafeteria, but we also opened up the outside area for those students who felt like they needed ventilation or snacks or just visiting, because the middle school experience is all about a wide variety. Some students came to dance. Some students just came to hang out with their friends. So we gave them options, both of which were extremely popular. And our PTSO was extremely involved in both events. We are currently planning, or in the stages of planning, for our February dance. Another aspect of our middle school experience that we recognized was missing were our traditions. Currently, we had our 13th annual McKinney Turkey Trot ran right before we went out on Thanksgiving break. It's an off-campus run, so they basically run the loop around McKinney and Kynoch. It's about a mile. We get sponsors from the community who provide turkeys, pumpkin pies, candy, or big chocolate bars as our students strive for PE and a PE assessment. The faster they run, the more tickets they get. The more tickets they get, the better chances they win. It's a huge success. In addition, right around that same time, Kynoch reached out to us and threw down a challenge for a canned food drive. And we went to our middle schoolers thinking they'd step up and we wouldn't have to get pied in the face. As you can see, they didn't exactly meet that. As a matter of fact, Kynoch kind of outdid us 2-1. Regardless, we reached 3,000 cans, which was our total goal, and all of the administrators got a pie in the face by those lovely young students. One key aspect of middle school is athletics. Our athletics program has taken a couple hits here and there as we've started and canceled and started and moved. But as you can see, our flag football program, our volleyball program, and currently right now our basketball programs are going strong. Our students are following the protocols that we've asked for, testing on Mondays with our staff and wearing masks when applicable. And it is a resounding success. Which brings us to our PE program. One area where our PE program brings a lot of students into one location. Our students are following those, they're complying to the guidelines, wearing their masks indoors. Right here is an example of a dance that was done prior to our December break, as well as fitness circuits being done to achieve and support our students. With that said, I am going to turn the mic back over to Mr. Stiles.
Thank you. Well, we have some new additions and enhancements to our campus that we are extremely excited about. Over summer, we got and received 3 new module buildings, which is now the home of our history department, our 7th and 8th grade history teachers, Mr. Chavez, Ms. Treble, and Mrs. George. They are excited. The students love the new facilities. We have a quad area for sitting, and the buildings are beautiful. We are also underway. Work kind of was slowed down due to Mother Nature, but our solar project is, I'm sure it's near completion at this point. We're excited for outdoor classrooms, educational opportunities, have some real-world discussions regarding energy use, and the possibility of holding community events there is extremely exciting. That's it. We would both like to thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Next, we move into the consent agenda. Oh, no, we don't. The next presentation is about the strategic plan. Dr. Ashwani.
Thank you. Thank you, Board President Davis. The district embarked on the strategic planning process this past year. And the best way to learn a district and its strengths and the areas of success and identify where we need to focus our human and fiscal resources is to really study our district. And that is usually done through developing a strategic plan, which then rests on what we have currently going on in our district, and then we gather that through surveys and through input from groups and conversations. So we have a short presentation on what the strategic planning process is. We have just barely started, so Russell, may I ask you to please press play? Thank you.
In the face of uncertainty, planning defines the particular place we want to be and how we intend to get there. Dear Governor, strategic planning is a process in which organizational leaders determine their vision for the future, as well as identify their goals and objectives. The process also includes a establishing a sequence in which every goal should fall, the organization is able to reach its stated vision. Therefore, time is spent on gathering input through surveys and discussions, identifying the organization's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, referred to as the SWOT concept, and developing smart goals, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. Basically, a family is based on intent that wants to measure and guide. I then to UNC's Gardner process, we will consciously do the following. This process will help us determine our strategic position in the community. We are responsible for graduating students with the skills and knowledge required for the world of tomorrow, not just for this region, but success in the global economy. We will ask ourselves questions like, what do we need to be able to do that? Who do we need to partner with? Where do we start? This is where we identify our vision as an organization and clearly state what our responsibility is and what we wish to achieve. The greatest factor is a plan to develop a big picture and to prioritize our objectives. Once we understand our strategic position and have identified our objectives, we are ready for the next step, developing a strategic plan. This will include clear objectives, actions, measurable outcomes, and how we will do these things, what resources we will need, and how we will allocate to each action. Finally, we'll identify the timeline for each action. Next, we need to execute and manage our plan. Then we will show the response. We'll know what the end time is, and we'll start putting in place clear and measurable steps to achieve the actions in the plan. Like every plan, we look at it annually, and then review and revise the plan to ensure we are making good progress. Or to identify why or why not, we may have to edit the plan. A good strategic plan is a wise plan, and it guides the district-wide action. What are the requirements for developing and implementing an effective strategic plan? It must be objective, based on our current needs and strengths, and driven by stakeholder input. It must be clear and transparent to all, easy to read and process, and include goals and actions that are realistic and achievable. But most importantly, it must be achievable now. It should be time sensitive. This plan must respect the organizational culture, but steer away from the mentality of, we do this our way, because as an educational institution, we must continue to pivot to changes that shift how we prepare our students for the global economy and the jobs both in and outside our community. A good plan can only be implemented by leaders who believe in moving the organization from good to great and understand the challenges associated with making changes so that we can look at the many opportunities beyond what we currently do. We have leaders everywhere. It is not dependent on titles or positions. It is each of us who believes that our single most priority is to our students. But how can we plan develop actions that ultimately lead to the students receiving a high level of education in the district? It will take discipline and accountability to follow the plan and stay the course. Finally, the plan is built to guide all our work, and we have to be transparent with our achievements and know that we are responsible for developing, implementing, and monitoring its progress together. The strategic plan is the overarching umbrella and leads to the other plans that the school districts have to develop. The strategic plan provides the basis for vision. The annual LCAP is specific to using funding for programs, professional development, technology, etc., and must be aligned to the strategic actions of the district. This is a very detailed plan, which is why the strategic plan is very streamlined. The site plan has to reflect the district-wide priorities of the LCAP, but with individualized site actions to meet the site goals, which reflect the district-wide goals. Then, each department should develop a specific departmental plan based on the strategic plan's overarching objectives and actions, and clearly identify how each department will meet the objectives set forth in the strategic plan. The facilities master plans are already underway, and the surveyor is currently chosen allows stakeholders to help prioritize our district-wide facility strategy. As you know, we're already working on Sobolod and Hudsoka, and soon we will start to address our integrated schools. Your input on the survey will help prioritize other projects. Now, let me review the steps for NJUSD. As we discussed at the slide back, a stakeholder survey was opened on October 17th, and several reminders have been sent. Please provide a few more dates to complete the survey if you haven't already done it. The questions are aligned to both programs and facilities. The stakeholder forums include monthly meetings with students and community groups, representative groups from teachers, and classified staff. We also host bi-monthly meetings and parent groups. In the next 2 weeks, we will start a brainstorming session with various groups and drive our work through a collaborative process. The strategic areas of focus will be the areas listed above. We will review our current practices, identify clear objectives and actions in each of these areas that we will achieve within the next 2 years in order to move our district from good to great. As part of the process, we will engage in SWOT analysis, which will keep us celebrating our strengths and what we do best, look at the areas we need to improve, identify opportunities that will help us get to the next level of excellence, and address the threats to our system, both internal and external, and how we may be able to address them. So finally, the roadmap here sets the stage for our work. As you can see, we started in October when we set up the forum. In December, we opened the survey to stakeholder input, and from February to May, we will meet in groups to work with the feedback, complete a SWOT analysis, and work on developing the plan. We anticipate that the draft will be ready for review and input in June, and the board will be able to adopt in July 2022. This plan will serve as the overarching plan and help us prioritize our work for students and community success. Thank you. If you have not taken the survey, there is still time and you can access it on the district's website link. If you have any questions, please email the district's public information officer, Ms. Courtney Hopkins, at the email listed. Have a great evening.
Thank you. Dr. Osrani, do you have any other comments?
I will have to say that we are getting ready to. We looked at the survey. We received close to 780 some odd survey results. We are disaggregating it. Part of it was also the facilities master plan update, which is part of the facilities master plan planning process. It's going to be exciting to see what the input has been. We've asked staff to respond, parents, community members, students, and families. And then this data can be disaggregated by school site as well, and we hope to do that and provide principal-specific input on what parents are asking for their school. So it served multiple purposes. It was a big, chunky survey, but it also meets the needs of the LCAP that we need to do, as well as multiple grants that we might want to apply for. So it was a very detailed, and I want to thank Courtney Tompkins at the back. She helped me a lot. I want to thank Angela, my assistant, for her work in putting it together and the input we received. So we'll come back to you with more updates. The sessions are starting with students tomorrow. I believe we've sent out an invite to our principals to ask teachers and classified staff who would like to join us. We have the DAC meeting and the DLAC meeting coming up soon. We'll be asking the parents to join us. And then, of course, we are meeting with management and administration. So we'll have input from hundreds of people. Each of the groups will have team leaders. And then we'll put up our sleeves and start writing the document based on the input that we receive. Through March, April, we start. It's a live document. It keeps evolving as the groups get more and more into the details. So I hope all of you will participate. And if you're interested, please send your name to Courtney Tompkins. We look forward to all your input to move the district from good to great. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we have updates, business services.
Good evening. Thank you. So my first update is, as Angela indicated earlier, last Tuesday I had the privilege to travel to Sacramento with President Davis, Trustee Hasty, Angela Siegel, and Tammy Straldini, and Dr. Asrani. We were able to attend the governor's workshop and learn about our 22-23 budget proposal. I also would like to acknowledge that the changing COVID guidelines and this recent surge of cases have really greatly impacted our schools, and I want to and the strain that it's put on our employees, students, and families, and just commend everyone for their dedication and flexibility as we get through this surge of cases. And then also in the news today, Governor Newsom approved an agreement to continue the paid COVID-19 leave for our employees that will extend through September 30th of 2022. So that's a little bit of a reprieve there for our employees. And then lastly, I'd like to shout out to our long-awaited Kynock Preschool Playground. This project started last spring, and it finally came to completion, and I want to thank Kathy Woods and the Kynock Preschool staff for all their patience during this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Education Services.
Okay, and I'm going to roll Education and Personnel into the same report. So I'm going to go with the HR department first. We have been working hard to close many of the staffing gaps that we have in the district. You continually hear the stress and the strain that this has put on all of our staff here in the district as well as our families. So for that, you wouldn't have felt it right now during this Omicron surge, but we've recruited additional substitutes. Those are additional 20 substitutes on our books. And again, our fill rate for covering absences has almost doubled. Out there in the field, you probably wouldn't feel that at the moment because of the number of absences that we've been through. This month, we were also able to fill some of the long-standing teaching openings, so we've hired 5 new teachers this month, as well as being able to secure short-term staffing permits for some of our people who are just entering the teaching profession so that they don't have to be rotated out of the classrooms. They can remain with their classes for the remainder of the year. We've conducted training with all administrative staff to start improving our practices revolving around staff support and evaluation. And then HR will be attending. We've registered for just about every job fair that we can find for the next year to hopefully secure staff and get us fully staffed for the 22-23 school year. We're hoping these events will be in person because we believe the folks of MJUSD sell MJUSD better when we can do it not virtually. But if they're virtual, we will sell our hardest there as well because I do believe this is a wonderful place to work. With that, educational services has also been in the depth of a ton of work right now when it goes to the FPM cycle, so we're in our federal program monitoring review. I'd like to give a shout-out to Jamie Larson first for all of her countless hours and dedication that she's put into this. On Friday nights when you're in the building and you still see people here at 9, 10 p.m. trying to get things done, that's to be appreciated. Alicia Wright, Mimi Magana, Cindy Helms, and Amy Stratton, along with a litany of other people who are here dedicated in order to make sure that everything gets uploaded and sent in for these reviews. With all of the plans and crossing of funds, there's a lot to that this year in particular. The board will see the midterm update to the LCAP as well as the LCAP addendum and budget overview for parents at the second meeting in February, so that'll be coming forward. And that'll be the point where we really start to engage in the stakeholder meetings as well to look at the next year of the LCAP. The LCAP is a 3-year plan that goes through 24, so we'll be looking at our data at that point, seeing what's working, what's not working, and what we need to adjust for the 22-23 school year. And then finally, as mentioned by Muta earlier, when Ms. Stiegel was up at the microphone, we are in negotiations at this point. We believe they're progressing. We have dates on the book with Muta again this Friday, and then CSEA coming up in early February as well. And the goal there, in order to keep those collegial and move those forward as fast as possible, to minimize any of the time out for the staff as well. And we do thank the teams for all the effort that they put into that, for their preparedness in coming into those meetings and the effort that they're putting in there. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Ishwari?
Thank you. I would like to start off with a big thanks to our staff. I think it's very hard to explain unless you are in the trenches and you're seeing the daily stress that our teachers, our classified staff, our custodial, our administrators, you know, the subbing in classrooms, our district office staff, thank you for going down and subbing in classrooms. It's just a never-ending trauma to our schools, and it's very hard to explain it, and I just hope you understand how much we appreciate everything that you do. And again, I would like to say that it's truly, I agree with some of the comments made that it is a time to be kind and to be gentle and to understand each other. None of us have the answers to the problems. We're just doing the best we can. It's unprecedented. We just know that every day is a new challenge. Our health aides, I mean, they're in the front lines. They're getting sick. Our nurses. I look at everybody and I think our bus drivers. I mean, I don't know who else to say. I think our cabinet running around and doing, you know, as much as we can do. So please be patient with each other. Learn to love each other. We work together for our children and we are here to support you. Based on that, I'd also like to say that, let me put on my glasses since I'm old and I'm getting blind. Very soon we'll be changing the start times for the high schools and middle schools. And I'm putting that out in some of my announcements, but it's important for us to realize that this isn't a district-wide decision. This isn't a choice we have. It's a Senate Bill 328 that was passed in 2019 by Governor Newsom, and that pretty much stated high schools will start 8:30 a.m. or later, and middle schools will start 8 a.m. or later. So there's going to be shifts in the start schedules for high schools and middle schools. We've done some preliminary timing. We've worked with Greg Taylor. Thank you, Greg, for your work with us with transportation. And we have a draft, and then we intend to sit down with MUTA, and we need to sit down with our principals and really drill down into the viability of some of the timing. So we'll be working with you again. We'll come to that. And I do want to mention that I was part of the ACSA Legislative Council back in 2017 when this conversation came up in the state. And I was one of those assistant superintendents that went with high school principals to the state and made such a noise against doing this, because we know it impacts sports, it impacts after-school programs, it impacts a lot of things. But unfortunately, as you saw, we did not prevail. Okay, so today you'll be hearing about the inter-district board policy, and it was a work that I must say I'm really proud that when I came into the district, I was asked about certain decisions to make, like, why are we losing so many kids from Edgewater? Why can't we change some of the boundaries for Johnson Park? Some of the parents who actually bought houses thinking they're going to Edgewater now are no longer in Edgewater. Edgewater's impacted. What are we going to do about it? And I take some time to learn, and I'm learning fast as I can. And I think once we spend some time, and I would like to give a shout out to Ms. Crow Critchfield and her team, they brought me some questions. I wasn't ready to respond. I really didn't have the knowledge. So we started pulling the data, and today you'll see a phenomenal presentation from Ms. Critchfield and her team, and especially she asked some very tough questions, and we went and found the data. So we'll have her respond to some questions that will come up, I'm sure. 2 months ago, the district applied for and received the CDE approval for SS3. I want to give a shout out to Ms. Jennifer Pasilia. She's been relentless in making sure we get the funding approval, which means now we can use those fundings for foothills improvement. And I know our families in the foothills and students attending Foothill Intermediate is probably saying it's high time we do that. And in that conversation also, as we're looking at the schools in the foothills, very many years ago, way before my time, there's been some discussion that we need a high school up in the foothills. So as we're looking at where are we losing children in the inter-district permit and what do we need to do as a district to keep our kids here, the conversation came up as this is a time to talk about opening a high school in the foothills. So preliminary conversation is that Dobbins will turn into a high school starting next fall. What would that mean is a big back-breaking discussion that's going to start now. We'll, of course, have a lot of hands on deck in the planning conversation. But next week I'll be meeting with the communities up in the foothills to make sure the parents hear from me. I hear from them. And I've asked board member Mr. Boom to join me as well as Mr. Doug Priddle. We'll meet with the communities and get some response. And I'm really excited about that. So we'll bring more information. I'm almost done. Please check the board agenda for upcoming meetings that are coming up with the budget study that's coming up as well as facilities master plan. And I believe it's educational facilities master plan, what the sizes of the classrooms should be, et cetera. It's all on the board website, so please kind of look at that. I would like to take a special moment to please thank the students for FFA at MHS. And we just saw the awards that the students achieved. And I'm sad the parent is not here today, and I want to give a shout-out to Joanna and her kids, because both of the kids did excellent in those, along with other students too. But I know Joanna has been a regular attendee, and just today when I wanted to give a shout out, she wasn't here, but I'm sure she's hearing me. I would like to thank you, Principal Matthews, for your work and the work of your team in pushing such wonderful programs at your site. I wish to take a few minutes and thank Principal Malone. Tim Malone has retired this month. His last date was last Friday. After an extensive service to the district, he's now moved on and retired. And I know he's been talking about this for a couple of years. And in the next couple of months, you'll see some changes happening administratively. A lot of people are making decisions to step into different positions and try for different things. And we encourage that, I think. And Tim Malone is one of them. He's moved out and he's going into his happiness time right now, I'm sure. And then he'll decide what he'll do next. So please, if you see him, thank him. And we are going to be doing a celebration for retirees coming up in May. We plan to do something really nice with white tablecloths and such in the field back there. So we'll invite everybody to come and enjoy our retirees and tell them that. And yes, I would like to thank Mr. Florek. I met him at the Linda Lions Club, and I was so impressed. Thank you, Mr. Davis, for taking me there. And we are meeting such wonderful members in the community, and there's such interest in the work we're doing here. So again, thank you. And I know sometimes in our positions, we're not always able to say yes to all our friends, and it just doesn't mean that we don't agree. It just means sometimes we just cannot say yes to everything, so it becomes difficult. We hear you, and we hear that it's going to be a strong negotiation, and I wish both parties the best as they proceed. So thank you.
Thank you. Now we have the approval of minutes. We have two sets of minutes to approve. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 12-14-2021. Is there any discussion about those minutes that the board would like to address at this time? If not, do I hear a motion? Motion approved by Doug Quiddle. A second?
Second
by Gary Quiddle. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? It passes. The minutes for the special board meeting of January 3rd, 2022. Is there any discussion about those minutes? If not, do I hear a motion? Motion approved by Ms. Hasty. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Broom. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We have one abstain by Frank Crawford. Then we move to the consent agenda. Are there any items in the consent agenda that any member wants to pull at this time? So you're not pulling it?
No.
Okay. If there's no item to be pulled, is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
Motion
approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Hasty. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passing 7-0. Now we move to new business. Okay. The first item is from the superintendent. It's adopt a resolution 2021-22/12 School Board Recognition Month. Dr. Paul.
Thank you. I think it's such a it's such a wonderful opportunity for members of the community to volunteer and serve as school board members. We thank you for your dedication. We thank you for your hard work. It's only when people sit at this side of the podium that you see how much planning, how much detailed discussion happens to run the district's business. So this January, month of January, is the School Board Recognition Month, and I offer that we look at adopting this resolution henceforth recognizing January as the School for Board Recognition Month. We also recognize our ex-board members. It was such a wonderful way to celebrate the work of dedicated officials to the school board. Thank you.
Is there any discussion? If not, do I hear a motion?
Motion approved.
Motion approved by Doug Quiddle. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Boone. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 7-0. Now we have the first read of Board Policy 4040, Employee Use of Technology. This is an information item.
Hello. This is the first read of the acceptable use policy. If you take a look, the employee acceptable use policy actually has not been updated since 2008. It still talked about pagers and other things that we don't actually use anymore, so we are long overdue. Took a look at multiple districts across the state, districts that I respect, and this is actually the most common language used for this particular acceptable use policy for employees throughout districts in the state. There are some that are much more involved and much more in depth, but this covers us, and it's very standard with districts throughout the state.
Are there any questions for Brian? Thank you.
Okay.
The third item is a first read of board policy 6163.4, student use of technology. Brian?
And just like employees use technology, students do as well. This one's been updated much more recently, but there have been, especially with COVID and everything with distance learning, some changes. We just wanted to make sure that we had a policy in place that was going to acknowledge all those and make sure we cover the district for any possible liability on the usage of the technology that we provide. And so we are making some changes to the student acceptable use policy as well.
Are there any questions for Brian? Thank you, Brian.
Okay.
The fourth item is approval of employee contract assistant superintendent personnel services. Dr. Israni?
Thank you. On December 14th, we discussed, and it was brought in closed session and approved in open session, for Mr. Dr. Greco to be served as interim assistant superintendent of personnel till end of June 2022. I think this is a good time to give him a chance to kind of do the excellent work he's already doing, but I'd make a decision as to this is what he really wants to do. He stepped in at a time when there was such a void, and he's just blown us away, honestly. So I strongly urge that the board adopt this motion so we can compensate him at the rate to which he needs to be compensated for the job he's currently doing.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board? Frank Crawford has made the motion to approve. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Hasty. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Education Services. First read of Board Policy 5116.1, Intra-District Open Enrollment. Ms. Crutchfield?
It was funny. I looked at Amy. She's like, your turn, Jolie. So good evening. I'm happy to be here today. I'm Jolie Crutchfield, Director of Student Supports and Innovations. So I do have some data that I wanted to share with all of you just so that you guys kind of understand where, you know, the change or the update in policy is coming from and why we're looking at how many inter-districts and stuff are coming through. So currently my office processes about 2,000 inter-districts and intra-districts. That's a combination of those that are leaving the district and those that are kind of going in between schools. And so Dr. Azrani, when we're working on facilities and we're working on our LCAP and we're working on all those things to improve our school sites, these are the things that we need to see. We need to find out from parents why they feel that they need to move their children out of our district. So I'm just going to share some of the data that we have so you can see this and the reason behind the work. So as you know, that we have 23 schools in Marysville, and we serve about 10,000 students. And all of you, I'm sure, have been to our high schools and junior highs and elementaries, and you can see just the hard work and the dedication of the staff at the schools with the different CTE programs, the after-school programs, the STEM and the STEAM elective programs, dual enrollment, all the things that we're doing for our students that is pretty impressive. And so with all of this, why are our students wanting to attend schools outside our district? And so gathering that data and kind of finding that out can help us make those changes needed. And also, you'll see with the fiscal impact of them leaving our district, what that in turn is happening to our schools. When we have parents up here wanting updated tracks or updated facilities for our students, and then seeing the amount of money that's going out of our district, and we're unable to do those things. So these are just some of the questions that, you know, we can look at through our data. So there is criteria. So I know there's been a little bit of talk and people panicking, like, oh my gosh, my kids already attend a school outside of the district. Does that mean you're not going to improve it? That is incorrect. We want students to stay at their school of residence, or their school of residence, the school that they've been attending. That's important for social emotional reasons and for the academic piece. And so the other criteria for new families moving out of our district and maybe attending in school in Wheatland or Yuba City is that if they're active military or their siblings are currently attending. So if there's a third grader that's attending one of the elementary schools and the parent wants their new kindergarten student to attend that school, we're obviously going to approve that. The parent doesn't want to be sending their children to two different schools. And then the child care, we understand that if both parents are working outside of the district, we're going to approve that as long as, you know, they have the documentation. I brought both of my children, I live in Yuba City, and both of my kids attended. One graduated from Marysville High School, the other from MCAA. And so I understand what it means if when you're working outside that it's important to be able to bring your kids to the school that's close to you. And just individualized issues, if there's maybe a safety concern, we want to know about that as well so that we can rectify it. So this is a little bit of data that we're doing right now, and these intra-district is students that are going changing schools within our district. So maybe they live in the attendance of Ella and they want to go to Cedar Lane. This is where you'll see our kids going in between different schools. Many of the students, because parents might move, they want to keep their students at the school that they started. And so we obviously, if there is room, we approve that because we want the kids to continue in the school that they started. So this is just some of the data that you'll see. You'll see at Marysville High School, 165 students that typically would maybe attend Lyndhurst are attending Marysville High School, and then you'll see McKinney and the different percentages there. So that's just within our district changing schools. These are the students, the number of students just this year that left Marysville Joint to attend another school outside of our district, and this is where they left. So you'll see, like, you know, Edgewater has a waiting list right now. How come there's 115 kids leaving? Well, our boundaries, the way they're set up outside of the school where you can't walk, where they have to be bused, that's not Edgewater attendance area. It's Johnson Park. So the boundaries were kind of moved to be able to accommodate the students that live closely in proximity to Edgewater. And because of that, a lot of the families move their children to Wheatland so they can attend those schools. And so you'll see the different number of kids leaving our district. Our BOGA, 138, and we're hoping with the K-8 we'll be able to keep those kids in our district from till 8th grade. So we'll see with the facilities update. I'm almost certain that's going to happen. So these are the students when you look at how many students just this year are enrolled in this, school districts outside of our district. This is where the majority of students are. We have some that are like two here, two there, but the majority of are in Wheatland Elementary. You'll see Wheatland High School, but a lot of the times they just kind of roll over and they may not, maybe don't get an inter-district agreement signed, but you'll see the Wheatland Elementary, 351 students of ours. That's huge. And then Yuba City Unified, 122. and we get about 300 students from outside the district that come to our district to attend our schools, but not nearly the amount that's leaving our district. These are the students that parents have left because they are in the military. So they're active military, and so you'll see the number there, 77 active duty at Beale. And then the parents that are employed, those aren't active military, but they are civilians that are employed there. And they're, why am I having a hard time with this? These are really small numbers, and so it's like, oh, my gosh, look at all those numbers. But you'll see when it says total released in that top-hand corner, the 427 students, that's what was released this year. And then we put them across the grade span so you can see how many on each grade span for this year. And then you'll see the next year because a lot of them, we signed the five-year. If they went to kindergarten at Wheatland Elementary, they would be able to stay until fifth grade. And then a new interdistrict would have to be signed if they go to Bear River, which is the intermediate school, or in Yuba City, if it's a K-8 school, they'd be released until then. So the fiscal impact is tremendous if you see on the side. So you'll see here just this year, the impact of students that have left is over $7 million. And over the course of the time, and by 2028, obviously this is a rough estimate, if all students stay on interdistricts and continue, is over $43 million that our district is losing. And when you see that number, you think of programs and facilities and all those things that we can be doing for our own students. So, and I think that's the end of my slideshow. I told Dr. Fall, I want to put like all these pictures of all the different things that we're doing at our schools. And she says, keep it under 10 minutes, Jolie. And I said, okay, I'll try. But we do have, and I just, you know, one thing that I want to say is I cannot express how much, like when you think about, it's not just the academic piece that Marysville Joint offers to our families. It's how we go above and beyond for our families. Last year alone, when most people were working from home, including our support staff, our staff were here at the school site doing home visits. We literally made over 3,000 home visits, went into the homes to get kids connected so they could use their Chromebooks. We invited students on campus that were having trouble engaging. They did Halloween parties. They had drive-through, all kinds of stuff. And so that was throughout our district that we did. And so I just want to applaud our staff in our district. We go way above and beyond for our students because we really love them and we care about them. And so I just want to be able to work with our families to kind of find out, why is it that you want to leave our district? Because we want you to stay. And so if you have any questions for me, I'd love to answer any.
I just have one quick one, Jolie.
Yes.
The $7.6 million, I think it was, you had up there, was that a net or a gross?
Is it mean before taxes and after taxes?
No,
is that what you're talking about?
I'm thinking before expenses and after expenses.
No, that's gross. It is, you know, we didn't take out what it would cost to educate those students and with teachers and what it would take, because we do. If those kids stay here, we have to make sure we have the capacity to house them, and we would have to hire more teachers and all of that. So that's a good question.
I have a question.
Yes.
So for next year, are you saying we're only going to deny kindergartners leaving our district, or are you, what are you?
So that's what we're looking at for next year, because we're kind of starting slow. We obviously are working so hard to improve everything that we're doing educationally. But, yes, we are looking at the kindergartners. Surprisingly, like even right now, we have students that are being that are requesting to leave this year. And so my conversation to them is, why? Why is it? Is there a school within our district that we have space that you can attend? Is it an after-school program? You need daycare? We have that. And so just being able to have those conversations with people, certainly if they're very passionate about being at the school and there's a good reason, we're going to release them. But, yes, we're looking at next year, especially our TK kindergartners, new students. No, it really is probably the TK kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it starts, too, because at Arboga, they tend to, they're on the borderline of Plumas, you know, out that way, Edgewater, the students are military. So we have schools that have a lot that kind of leave. Cedar Lane is a neighborhood school. A lot of them stay at Cedar Lane. So it's kind of those schools. And that's why we need to really look at the data so that we can put the money there to where it's needed to make sure parents can send their kids to the neighborhood schools and feel good about it. Any other questions?
Very good report.
Okay.
Thank you for all your efforts on this. My perspective on this is looking at it as a business, and I'm losing customers.
So yes.
Looking at your list of five things, we can't really control one, two, and three, but unique programs offered and individualized services and issues and stuff like that, that's something that we can address. So my question, and I know you're still working on the data and stuff, but I'd be curious to find out, okay, what programs are not being offered or individualized services that are affecting the biggest pieces of this pie?
Mm-hmm.
We're losing a lot of people to Wheatland, Plumas Lake, and I'm surprised. I thought it was more over to Yuba City. I'm kind of shocked at this. I thought Yuba City would have been bigger. So, again, I'm just kind of curious, why are they leaving? That would be my question to look at that when you have a chance to aggregate the data.
And, you know, I'm surprised because the numbers are kind of over that way. We border Wheatland. You know what I mean? We border that way. And so that it's easier. We're in Marysville. It's a little bit harder to get into Yuba City. Their schools are, you know, but Wheatland and Plumas Lake are right in our backyard. And so when they kind of have that option, but, you know, like I said, our, you know, Lyndhurst especially, I'm not sure what the perception is, but they've got an incredible staff. I've been to lots of meetings where teachers are willing to think so outside the box for their students. ROTC, they have the cooking class, the media is just amazing. And so I think there's a perception maybe out there that we need to maybe tour the school or be able to see what they're missing. And so, and I know Bob will attest to that. Yeah. I mean, Mr. Eckhart sent his own child there. Our kids have come to our schools. And so if we felt that they were not adequate, I certainly would not send my own child to a school in Marysville. I live in Yuba City. So, you know, and Yuba City has great schools. Wheatland has great schools, but we do too. So let's just, if parents can stay here, that would be great. We would love that. So.
Comment, Julie. I want to thank you for this presentation. I want to thank you for tickling my brain thinking. And again, you asked a great question, Gary, with Mr. Criddle, which was, why are the kids leaving Edgewater? There's just no space. So what happens is that parents who bought houses over there, the new and shiny schools are in Plumas, the new and shiny schools are in Wheatland or what have you. But our point is this, if the dollars walk away, then what do we have to make our schools nice and clean? We need to hire more teachers. We heard some requests. We need to look at compensating our teachers. Well, the dollars are walking away with the kids, so that puts us, and as you saw, in 6 years, what estimated. Now, and I want to say that my business official did want me to correct this very carefully. We get per student ADA for attendance. In this presentation, we looked at enrollment because the kids are not attending our school, so we take it as zero attendance, so 100% walkout. So it's an estimate based on the LCFF ADA numbers, which is about 8,500 for elementary, about 8,700 for middle, and 10,000 something for high school. So we use that to calculate. And when the work that we are doing now is we're going deeper into the data and seeing where exactly and why exactly are they leaving. But we hear it's all about a lot about the sports in high school, right? Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
But
correct.
Then we have this big need to do the Marysville track. We have the big need of doing up Lyndhurst football stadium. And so if the students are leaving us and everybody wants to be, I'm sorry, I have to just, you know, I don't have many players I want to name, so I won't name anybody in case somebody doesn't like the group I like. But there are some, everybody wants the children to be the best they can be, right? Absolutely. So then that comes back to us. Then what happens building our own internal programs? At what point do we stop and say we can do the same if our children stay with us? So if all the Tom Bradys leave us, then what do we have left is, I guess, my question. I know there are people who don't like Tom Brady, but I just have to take a USC shot in public here.
Thank you very much. And we will be asking those questions, and I'll have very specific data, because if it is something that, you know, we can improve, we definitely want to work on it. So I'll have that for you as well. Thank you so much.
So did you do 1 and 2?
Yes.
You said the intra and the inter? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Number 3, the second read of Board Policy 3516.5, Emergency Schedule. The purpose of this agenda item is to provide the Board with the opportunity to complete the second read of the new Board Policy 3516.5, Emergency Schedule.
Board Policy 3516.5 allows the superintendent to authorize an apportionment credit for days missed due to emergency closures in our schools, such as fires and things like that.
Are there any questions from board members? Thank you. I need a motion to close the public hearing. Frank Crawford has a motion to approve it. Do I have a second? Second by Doug Criddle. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Number 4. Thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt this policy. All those in favor say aye. You haven't made a motion?
Oh, we have a motion.
Oh, you made a motion.
Yeah, I would make a motion.
Okay. I can't hear you, so it's like...
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay. Motion to approve.
Okay. So we have a motion to close the public hearing.
Yes.
And we have a second.
Yes. And we already voted on that.
We already voted on that. So now we have a motion to approve and adopt.
And adopt. Approve and adopt.
Approve and adopt BP 3516.5.
That's correct, sir.
So we have a motion to approve. Do I hear a second?
Second.
By Peter Criddle. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passing 7-0. Number 4. Second read of Board Policy 2016-20, Parent and Family Engagement. Purpose of the agenda item is to provide the Board the opportunity to complete the second read of the new Board Policy 2020, Parent and Family Engagement Policy.
This policy is part of the Title I, Part A of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. It requires the local educational agencies to conduct outreach to all parents and family members and implement programs, activities, and procedures for involvement of parents, family, and family members.
Are there any comments or questions on this item? Do I need a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close.
Jeff Boom has a motion to close the public hearing. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Frank Crawford. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now we have a motion to approve and adopt BP 6020.
Motion to approve BP 360.
We have a motion from Mr. Crawford to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Gary Criddle. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes 7-0. We have number 5, second read of Board Policy 6142.5, Environmental Education. Purpose of the agenda item is to provide the Board the opportunity to complete the second read of a new Board Policy 6142.5, Environmental Education.
This policy allows our schools to have relationships with agencies like Yuba County Water Agency, UC Davis, and it certainly encourages our STEM schools that we have coming forward to take a deeper look in our natural resources around our schools.
Do we have any comments from board members? Do I have a motion to close the public hearing? Motion to close by Mr. Boone. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Crawford. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Motion to approve and adopt Board Policy 6142.5. Do I hear a motion?
Motion to approve and adopt
6142.5. Motion by Doug Criddle, second by Mr. Crawford. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 7-0. Pass. Personnel services. Approve the salary wage increase for unrepresented employees. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve a salary wage increase for the California School Employees Association and its Maryville chapter 326, CSEA number 326. Rocco?
And so it should be noted as well that there is a typo in the title. It should be CSEA 326, not unrepresented. So this was on 12-14, we reached tentative agreement between CSEA for the 2020-2021, that's a lot of 20s, school year, and that was the 4% off schedule one-time payment. At the time of publication, or at the time we published, it was still awaiting ratification. It has been ratified by the membership since this was published at this point.
Is there any questions from the board members? If not, is there a motion to
approve? Motion to approve the salary wage increase for unrepresented employees.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Doug Criddle. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. That's the end of our meeting.